Second hour, Darren Donegan Chase here live at Bridgestone Arena. We're at the Patron Platinum Club Predators tonight hosting the Winnipeg Jets. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have your call here on these airwaves. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6 o'clock. Darren McFarland, that's me. Derek Mason alongside. And our Predators game day broadcast is brought to you by Hermitage Design Center, the professional source for lighting, hardware, appliance, custom kitchens and baths. You can go to their website, GoHermitage.com. Titans and Bengals, not far from where we are here in downtown Nashville on this cold Thursday. We'll begin the divisional round on Saturday afternoon when the Titans host the Bengals. And with that being said, let's head to Cincinnati. Mo Egger, ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati. He's been doing it for a long time there, now joins us. Mo, good morning, or I guess in your neck of the woods, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm doing great. What's going on?
We were talking about this yesterday, and we see it more and more around the league. And I'm just going to start here real quick. And I don't even know if you have the answer to this, but it's come back around. And obviously, this is the second round of the playoffs, so it's going to be different. It's been a while. The Titans haven't hosted very many home playoff games, but you know, there's been a lot of visiting fans in the stands around the league. Cincinnati isn't that far. You know, Nashville's become a destination place for people to go. How, you know, what's your best guess of Cincinnati fans that'll make their way into Nissan Stadium? Has that been a big talk in your market this week?
Oh, yeah. And what you have, it's interesting. I was just talking with a coworker of mine who's going. He's going to be in Nashville. He doesn't have tickets to the game. I know a lot of people like that, right, who it's 3.5-4 hours away. It's an awesome town. It's, frankly, it's maybe going to be a tinge warmer in Nashville than it's going to be in Cincinnati on Saturday. And I think you have a lot of people who just want to be there for the atmosphere. And, you know, there's worse places to spend a Saturday, worse places to spend a weekend than Nashville. It's my favorite city to visit, and it's killing me to not be able to go. And so I've talked to a lot of people who initially were like, yes, I'm going to the game. And then they saw the ticket prices and said, well, okay, well, I'll go to Nashville. And if I run into tickets, I run into tickets. I do think there's going to be a pretty fair representation of Bengals fans. I've been to two Bengals-Titans games, one in 2011, the other, I want to say, 2018 maybe. And, you know, one year that was a pretty decent Bengals team. The other year that was a horrific Bengals team. And there was still a lot of orange and black in the stands. And so given the fact that there's we have two cities in such close proximity to one another, given the fact that it's a 4:30 Saturday game and so people can spend all day Sunday going back, given the fact that this is uncharted territory for most Bengals fans, I think you're going to see a lot of Bengals fans certainly descend on Nashville, and I think the game is going to be, you know, you're going to see a lot of orange and black in the stands on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I want to also get a vibe on the market and for, you know, your show this week, because I think we're both, while we may get there, take a different route to get there, I think we're kind of ending up in the same place for like shows like ours and a show like yours. I just said it. The Titans haven't had very many home playoff games. This is only the third time since they've been in Nashville. They've been the number one seed. It's been a while. There's a lot of hype coming into this, and they're sitting there now in the second round waiting to play their first game, and oh, by the way, the best running back in the NFL is coming back. So there's obviously a huge amount of hype here about it. Meanwhile, in your market, as you just said, I mean, we know the storyline. I mean, they just got their first playoff win since, what, 1991? I mean, yeah. You're talking about, you know, heartache. So what has it been like in your market talking about this game and coming off that home victory over the Raiders?
You know, this week itself has been really, really interesting. And, I mean, you know, you talk about, I'm 44 years old, so I remember the Bengals' last playoff win, which came in a roundabout way against the Tennessee Titans. They were still the Houston Oilers. That's how long it's been. So having grown up here and having lived here all my life and having been in sports talk radio for as long as I have, it's been interesting to watch the shift. And the shift started the moment the Bengals were going to get Joe Burrow. Not when they took Joe Burrow, but when it was when they locked in the number one overall pick in 2020. From that moment, when people saw Joe Burrow play at the end of his senior year at LSU and the Bengals had the number one overall pick, people were like, wait a minute, we're getting that guy? Okay, well, that sort of changes everything. And it's changed the conversation around the Bengals. But still, coming into this past weekend, you know, look, they had been to the postseason five straight years, 2011 through 2015, had some absolute gut punch losses. They hadn't won a postseason game in 31 years. There's been such a long drought of professional sports success in this town that I think people are just sort of wired to expect the worst, especially, you know, at the end of that game, for folks who watched it, you know, a couple minutes to go, Raiders have the ball down by seven. There isn't anybody who has followed this franchise who didn't expect the worst thing to happen. Unfortunately for the Bengals, Jermaine Pratt picked off a pass, and it triggered a celebration that you typically don't see when a team wins a wild card game, and that was based on the amount of time it had been since the Bengals had last won in the playoffs. From the end of that game to now, you've seen a whole lot of people who just want to keep celebrating last week, and I think there's been a sense of, all right, this game on Saturday, kind of house money. Nobody expected this team to make the postseason. Nobody expected this team to win the division. A lot of people assumed they would lose the playoff game because they are the Bengals and that's what they do. So here they are in a position where if they lose the game, it's not devastating. But it's also a tremendous opportunity. Let's be honest. I think everybody here respects the season the Titans have had. But I would also tell you that I think if you ask most Bengals fans, all right, second round opponent, who would you rather play? Kansas City at Arrowhead? The Bills in Buffalo, or the Titans 4 hours away at Nissan Stadium, I think most would say we'd rather play the Tennessee Titans. Give us the quarterback who's not Patrick Mahomes. Give us the quarterback who's not Josh Allen. Give us Ryan Tannehill. Yeah, give us Derrick Henry. Let's take our chances against that team. So I think you have a lot of people who have embraced the opportunity, but I don't think this game is being framed as, OMG, if they lose it, we're going to have to start taking a major look at where this franchise is going. This season really does feel like the start of something special, but I think a lot of people are really confident about how the Bengals might fare on Saturday.
Larry Ogunjobi is out, the big D tackle with the foot injury, so we know he's not going to play. Let's just start there. How big of a loss is that for Cincy?
Pretty big one. They're not a great defense against the run. They're not a terrible defense against the run. But if they're going to have a great game against the run, you need Larry Ogunjobi. And, you know, we should start there because if you look at the game last Saturday, I think that was the one thing you came out of that game going, God, you know, who's going to be left on the defensive line for him? Trey Hendrickson left that game, concussion protocol. They lost Josh Tupou the previous week in a game that meant nothing. Larry Ogunjobi comes off on a cart. His season is over. You know, how many healthy regulars do they have? And the answer is they have three. So they're going to have to slide in some guys. They're going to have to play Tyler Shelvin, who's a player they drafted this year, who didn't play much of the season. They've signed some guys from the practice squad. But Larry Ogunjobi was one of their best free agent acquisitions that they've had in a while. And without him, I don't care who you're playing, that absence is going to be felt. When the other team has the best running back in football, that absence could be glaring, and it's certainly worth paying attention to on Saturday.
Well, and the other guy that's really worked out well is Trey Hendrickson, who you brought up, who did leave the game. But I did see where he was back out on the practice field yesterday. Does that tell us that all signs are pointing towards him being available Saturday?
Would be surprised if he wasn't, and they need him. Trey Hendrickson, another free agent signing, and one that wasn't universally embraced because they basically said goodbye to Carl Lawson willingly, and Carl was a very good player. Unfortunately, got injured in training camp with the Jets this season, but he was their best pass rusher last year. Everybody thought they were going to put a premium on bringing him back. Instead, they chose to let him walk. They signed Trey Hendrickson from the New Orleans Saints, a guy who had a good season last year, but I think people thought that maybe his sack total in 2020 was the byproduct of the defense that he was on. And as it's turned out, he's been better than anybody ever could have expected. He's been better than Carl Lawson was last year. He is their best player at getting to the quarterback. He is their best player at disrupting offenses. And not that they don't have other guys who can get home, but their pass rush begins with him. And so had they gone into this game on Saturday without arguably their best interior defensive lineman and then without easily their best edge guy, that would have been a problem. Fortunately, it does look like he's going to be able to go.
We'll talk with Mo Eric, ESPN, 1530 there in Cincinnati. Now, you look at the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line. Obviously, they gave up 51 sacks, and you look at that as being an Achilles heel for them. But sometimes numbers can be deceiving. I can remember a few years ago when Ryan Tannehill got sacked a lot. but they started to fix the offensive line toward the end of the season. Is that the case with the Cincinnati Bengals where, you know, there were games where they had – they were bad, but as the season started to go on and later in the season, they sort of fixed the offensive line woes?
They've never been good. I think if you go back to the Raiders game on Saturday, they were as good as you could expect, especially on the left side. The left side of the offensive line, I thought, held up really, really well. They're playing a backup right tackle by the name of Isaiah Prince, who was not great against the Raiders. I think if you're looking for a spot where maybe the Titans can attack, you start there. They've been okay. I don't know that there have been many games, regardless of what combinations they've used, where you have been just wowed by the play of the offensive line. Perhaps the two Pittsburgh games, because they ran the ball really effectively and they had sort of a running scheme that you could just follow along with Joe Burrow or Joe Mixon following his blockers. But, you know, you mentioned the total that sticks out, 51 sacks, and frankly that number could have been a lot worse if Joe wasn't so good at getting rid of the football quickly and wasn't so good at, you know, just sort of keeping himself upright and getting himself out of trouble. And despite how good Joe was at those things, he still took more hits than any quarterback in the NFL. He was still sacked more than any quarterback in the NFL. So what you're hoping for game to game with this group is that they're okay. And the reality is, most of the time when they've been okay, this offense has flourished. You really haven't had the disastrous game. You really haven't had the game where you thought, man, over the course of the afternoon, Joe just simply hasn't had time to throw. He has still, for the most part, found ways to make plays. But I think if you were to ask most Bengals fans all season long, the offensive line, what's the thing that could doom this team most in the postseason if they get there? They would start there. They would start with the offensive line, and they would start not only with its ability to pass protect, but also its ability to find lanes for Joe Mixon, because they've struggled at times with that as well.
Now, look, at going back to their defense, what has obviously – the talk beside, you know, the quarterback and Derrick Henry, what has been the talk with that defense as far as guys they need to concentrate on? Are they making a bigger emphasis on the Titans passing game? Because now they have all their guys fully equipped in their back, AJ Brown, Julio Jones, everyone's healthy now. So are they putting a little bit more extra emphasis on that passing game of the Titans?
I think so. I think especially if you look at, and you guys watched every snap, when the Titans won their most difficult games, A.J. Brown had really, really good games statistically. I think they view Derrick Henry as somebody that they're not going to necessarily be able to completely stop. And I think if you go back to the game last year, a game that the Bengals somehow figured out a way to win, the first thing that stands out is they've upgraded from Corey Davis. Corey Davis was the leading wide receiver for the Tennessee Titans that afternoon. Well, they're a little bit different on the outside. And so I think it starts with A.J. Brown. And, you know, you talk about a unit on this team that from game to game, you know, what do you expect? It's really been the secondary. There have been times where guys have played, I think, better than you would expect. You know, Chidobe Awuzie. I said before the season, the Bengals in the secondary led the league in guys that when you watch this team play, you said, oh, wait a minute, that guy's with the Bengals now? Or, oh, yeah, I remember him. Or, that dude is still in the league? Trey Waynes, Eli Apple, Chidobe Awuzie, Von Bell. A lot of guys like that. Not that they're bad players, but, you know, game to game, I think there's times you don't really know what to expect, and I think that's been the MO with this secondary. I think the player to watch on Saturday is going to be Jesse Bates, because Jesse has been maybe the most interesting Bengal all year long, because he's coming off a season in 2020 in which I think he thought, and a lot of people thought, he might be given a contract that makes him the highest paid safety in the NFL. And the Cincinnati Bengals did not agree with that. So they had this huge contract impasse. Jesse wants to be the top paid safety. Bengals don't believe he should be the top paid safety. What happened this year? Jesse, by his standards, didn't have a very good season. But he was excellent on Saturday against the Raiders. And to me, that was the story of the game, his resurgence. He did everything. He helped out in run support. He was great against the pass. He forces a huge incompletion in that game on Las Vegas' second drive. So, all right, you know, you look at him, first of all, you're going to have somebody on the second level that can tackle Derrick Henry, start with Jesse Bates. And then depending on how they roll their coverage, Jesse is at his best in that role. When he's been really, really good, he has thrived in that role. When he has been really, really bad, teams have picked on him. I don't know what you're going to see on Saturday, but whether or not the Bengals win or lose, I think Jesse Bates is going to have a lot to do with it either way.
It's going to be fun on Saturday afternoon for sure. Mo, appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk down the road.
All right, anytime, guys. Thanks.
Mo Edgar, ESPN 1530 there in Cincinnati, and he just said it. Hey, there's a lot of Bengals fans that are coming with a ticket or coming without a ticket.
Hoping they
and
can
if they
get
in,
ticket. Yeah,
they get in. If they don't, oh, well, we'll hang out.
They'll watch it at the local bar somewhere.
I suspect they'll be, and I've seen the prices. The prices are, let's see. Now I'm trying to think of a clever word. It's not going to make you very comfortable. You're not going to feel good when you see the price. You know, you ever heard of the term sticker shock?
Yeah.
You know, there's a little bit of sticker shock because it is the divisional round. It's not the AFC championship game. It's the divisional round. And I don't really see anything under $500. Like, basically, you better be ready to spend $700, $800 a ticket.
It's like going to a jewelry store, because you know the jewelry stores don't have the price that you can see, and you're looking like, oh, I like that one for my wife or my girlfriend. And you're like, oh, can I see that one? And then the lady brings it out, and she flips it over, and you see that tag. You're like,
$25,000.
How about that one over there?
What about that one way back there? That one seems to be all alone. And
that's how Cincinnati fans
friends.
Will feel.
That
exactly.
Kind of nice.
That's how Cincinnati fans will feel.
You know, I love that club, the club level. You can go inside. Well, how much?
Oh.
What about those ones up by the light tower? How much are those in the corner? The one where you can lean back against the concrete wall.
Yeah.
How much are those?
It does make you uncomfortable when
you
see that.
I like the
price.
Club. But how much did you say? Okay. How about the ones in the light tower?
Yeah.
I know it's a little bit colder, but I got extra close. How much are those?
I can bring a blanket.
Yeah, I can bring a blanket.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, that's kind of how it works. So very, very interesting. Good stuff from Mo. We'll come back. We'll continue the discussion on the other side as you listen to Darren Donick, Chase, and D-Mace here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks, Becca. We'll see you in about a month here at Bridgestone Arena when they retire your number. It's going to be a fun night when they host the Dallas Stars in late February. Back here on the DDC, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We're here at Bridgestone Arena, Patron Platinum Club. Darren McFarland, Derek Mason with you. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the receivers. Let's start on the other side.
Okay.
Cincinnati drafted Ja'Marr Chase.
Home run pick.
A guy that Joe Burrow knew very well from their days together, went into national championship at LSU. This cat can stretch the field. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that, right?
He's a game changer.
He is a game changer. 81 catches, almost 1,500 yards this year, 1,455 to be exact, and 13 touchdowns. And let's see, I don't know what he did last week, but let's just start there.
He had six catches, I think. Six or nine catches. I know he had 12 targets. He had over 100 yards.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how good is this guy, one, through your eyes?
At this juncture,
as a rookie
in his early career, he's as good as any rookie that have stepped in that role at that position. If you look at his numbers and you compare him to every other rookie that has come in to the NFL, say, in the last 25, 30 years. Number-wise, I can't think of maybe one or two, Randy Moss maybe, his rookie year.
Which came through here.
Yeah.
His rookie year. Played
absolutely
against you guys at
but
Vanderbilt.
He had a Hall of Famer next to him.
Yep.
And Chris Carter. And then Jake Reed wasn't a slouch either.
Nope.
You know, and they had, you know, who was the quarterback then? Randall Cunningham.
In 98?
His first year was Randall Cunningham. That's when Randall came back and got comeback player of the year.
Okay.
And they went to the playoffs. Ended up losing the AFC championship game, I believe. So beside Randy Moss and maybe one or two other guys recently, Ja'Marr Chase has been that guy.
Mm. Yeah, nine catches, 116 yards versus the Raiders.
He possesses everything that you would want in a receiver. He catches the ball extremely well. He's a really good route runner. He has quickness, and he has long speed. And he has sort of this ability to make those really tough catches. He reminds me, in regards to the making the tough catch, he reminds me of Hopkins. Because to me, if you're talking hands-wise, Hopkins is the best receiver in the league by far in regards to catching the football. But Ja'Marr Chase is one of those guys that he makes the hard catches seem routine. And that's what you want in your playmaker. So he embodies, if you're putting together a receiver, he would embody that guy. He's 6 foot. He's fast. He's quick. He's a hands catcher. And he knows how to run once he gets the ball in his hand.
You know, I brought up they've played three of the remaining eight teams left. Mm-hmm. And one thing that did jump out at me, when they played Kansas City, he had 11 catches, which was the most for any game this year, mm-hmm. for 266 yards and three touchdowns. That's what he did against the Chiefs in their win. When they played the Packers back in October, he had six catches, 159 yards, and a touchdown. San Francisco did the best on him mm-hmm. in mid-December, five catches, 77 yards, but they still couldn't keep him out of the end zone. He had two touchdowns. Mm. So the reason I'm bringing this up is, of the eight teams left, Cincinnati played three of the eight teams, and look at his numbers against those teams. So my question is this guy a big-game receiver?
I think he is.
He's not wilting in the big spots. I mean, these are big. These are good teams, big profile games, and he's responded. I mean, he didn't have a bad game against any of them. He had huge games.
Well, if you go back, because we talk about Joe Burrow, and Joe Burrow has been what? He's been big game Joe from high school to college mm-hmm. to the NFL. This guy hasn't wilted in the bright lights of a game. Well, Ja'Marr Chase is the same way. You look at him, you know, his senior year or his junior year, because I believe he came out early. And the guy, especially the year, you know, that they won a national championship, the guy was phenomenal. There wasn't a game he didn't have, you know, five, six, seven catches for over 100 yards. And I know they had a trio of guys, but this guy, he and Jefferson were the two key guys. So this guy doesn't wilt when it seems like the stage has gotten bigger. He's played, if the stage is bigger, he's gotten bigger.
Yep.
And that's what you want, especially in this situation, your quarterback and your receiver. As the stakes get higher, they rise.
So how do they go about trying to contain this guy?
Well, you have to put coverage in. You can't go strictly one coverage all game. And no defense does that, truly, unless you got two lockdown corners. And we haven't seen that in a very long time. But you got to throw coverage at the quarterback. You got to try to confuse the quarterback with what you're doing. You got to get into your coverage late and not allow him to read it early. I remember years when we played, that's what we did with Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, those great quarterbacks. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes it didn't, but you had to try to confuse him at the line of scrimmage. And then the front four or the front seven, they have to be able to get to the quarterback. I say the front four because if you blitz these guys with those linebackers, they're going to make you pay. So you have to be able to get to the quarterback with your front four. So that's the way you slow down an offense like the Cincinnati Bengals with skilled players like they have. And it's not like the Titans hadn't been in this position before. They face teams with high-powered offenses, and for some reason, they've been able to sort of contain them.
Yeah, I think the key is going to be guys like Simmons, Big Jeff, and Autry up front.
They gotta put pressure on the quarterback.
They've gotta make Joe Burrow uncomfortable. They just do. I mean, I don't think there's any way around it. I mean, look, like you said, it's what you do to all the great quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. If you can get in their head. And they're constantly thinking about you mm-hmm. rather than what they want to do, then that's your best chance for success. Because if they're back there, as you've said, comfortable mm-hmm. and doing their thing, like, good luck. It could be a long day because they're so good. I think what's interesting about Cincinnati, they remind me a lot of Julio Jones mm-hmm. when he was in Atlanta. Right? You look at his numbers and you're like, holy crap, this guy. Woo! But what was the one thing missing on his stat line?
Touchdown.
Yeah. It's like how do you have 120 catches and 1,500 yards and have, you know, six touchdowns? How is that possible? Mm-hmm. But that's kind of like Julio Jones, like his whole career, right? Like, he's never been known for having big touchdown season, but having astronomical stat numbers, stat lines. Well, Cincinnati this year has kind of been the same way if you watch them. A team that's very good in between the 20s. Like, yeah, they can move up and down the field on you all day. But for whatever reason, they've had their struggles in the red zone. Because if you think about, like, Ja'Marr Chase's touchdowns, they weren't in the red zone, right? Because I just said it, he's stretching the field. I mean, this guy has – how many long touchdowns does he have this year?
He has 22 big plays.
Yeah. I mean
– 22.
22 yeah. In the NFL. This is not in college.
Uh-huh.
22 big plays in the NFL is huge. So this team can get after you, but in the red zone, for whatever reason, they haven't had a ton of success.
Well, it falls back to the offensive line. Once the field is condensed, how good is your offensive line? Because now you have to be able to run the football. You have to. And as good as Joe Mixon is, that offensive line doesn't complement him well inside the 20. So a lot of that does fall on the offensive line. But Shane Bowens, this is a game where he has to also mix up the coverages, bring blitzes at times that they may not expect blitzes. This is what great defensive coordinators do. This is what the good that want to be great does. When they get in situations like this, when they're playing high prolific offenses, or these great quarterback or elite quarterbacks, they find a way, not only with your front four, but they find a way to sneak in those blitzes when they're not expecting them. Overload right or left, putting pressure on points of the offensive line that's weak. Now, Cincinnati, their whole offensive line hasn't been as good this season. So they can pick and choose which side they're going to bring the blitzes from. All the great coordinators does that. They do that, especially during this time of the year. And Shane has to put these guys in position, and he has this whole season, put these guys in position where they can get to the quarterback. And sometimes he has to do, you know, twists, stunts, or whatever on the front four where they can get to the quarterback without blitzing.
So what do you think of the other two guys? He's got two very good complimentary receivers in Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins.
Well, T. Higgins is, I mean, I loved him in Clemson. Big guy, I think he's, what, 6'4", somewhere around there. Big guy that can go up.
So is Tyler Boyd. He's like 6'2".
Yeah. But if you look at T. Higgins, 71% of his catches have been first downs. That's huge for a Cincinnati team that needs a complement to Ja'Marr Chase. Now, Ja'Marr, on the other hand, you know, 69% of his catches have been first down. So they can pick and choose who they want to go to when it's 3rd and 10 or 3rd and 5. They got two guys that they can pick from. But I love T. Higgins. He's a big frame guy. He can go up and get the ball. He still has speed to get down the field. The guy averaged nearly 15 yards per catch with 6 touchdowns. So he missed 3 games, obviously. But they still have a trio of wide receivers. And then you just slip Tyler Boyd in there. I mean, he's another guy that a big guy, put him in the middle of the field. He's essentially a tight end but faster. And he is a mismatch problem for opposing defenses.
You know this is going to mean a little bit more for T. Higgins because he grew up in East Tennessee.
Yeah.
He went to Oak Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't go to UT.
No. Nah.
Went to Clemson. To a different Orange.
I remember when he was, you know, he was one of the most coveted players coming out. And he chose to go to Clemson. Well, it worked out for him. Now he gets an opportunity to come back to his home state and play in a playoff game. That's big in itself, I think. So I'm pretty sure he's going to be amped and ready to go once he gets here in Nashville to play Saturday.
There's no doubt about it. So we'll come back and talk about the Titans receivers. So we just kind of broke down. And by the way, those three, that's a pretty nasty 1-2-3 punch.
Yeah.
In the NFL. I think you can say there's not very many teams you could say have that type of production from their top three receivers. True?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, what other team can stack up 1-2-3?
1-2-3
like that.
Whew, maybe the Rams, that's it. Well, Woods is gone.
So
yeah,
who do you
right.
have after Kupp and Odell?
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I guess you got, what, Van Jefferson?
Yeah, Van is good. I like Van. He's coming on. But you're talking about.
I mean, Tampa, when they had everybody, of course they did.
Tampa's
they had
probably
the best.
Number one.
They had number one. They were the best. But they don't have, you know, Brown is gone and Godwin's out for the year. So. Exactly. Now they just have Evans. Mm-hmm. But that was the best 1-2-3 punch.
Yeah.
For sure. But there's not very many. I mean, Kansas City doesn't have a 1-2-3 punch like that. They're, if you were including a tight end,
yeah, they
as part of that.
But they're
I'm talking about just
you're
pure
right.
receivers.
Yeah, you're right. They don't, it's really just
Green Bay doesn't. Yeah. I mean, we know Devontae Adams, but the other 2 and 3 does not stack up to Higgins and Boyd.
Especially not number wise.
Yeah. No. The Titans don't.
But they hadn't been healthy. But you have A.J. and Julio. Yeah, but Westbrook, Akina, he's coming on, but he hasn't done what Tyler Boyd has done.
Yeah, 49ers don't. Yeah. So I would say nobody.
No.
Buffalo doesn't. Although Buffalo's got – they've got
– they have Stephon Diggs.
Emmanuel Sanders.
He's back.
And then Amendola. Gabriel Davis or something. He's been pretty good.
Yeah. Amendola's not with
no.
them. It's not Amendola.
Beasley.
Cole Beasley. That's who it is.
Cole
I'm thinking Amendola. Yeah, Cole Beasley.
Now,
Cole Beasley is pretty good in the slot, too.
Yep.
So.
I would say that's probably the closest team. Buffalo?
Yeah. Wouldn't
you say?
That's still in the playoffs.
Still in the playoffs.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back. We'll switch over to the Titans side when we come back. Right now I'm going to talk to you about my friends at Cool Springs MD. You've heard me talk about them for years because I've been going there for years. They've helped improve my quality of life for the last several years since I've been going there, and I hope you would want that like I do because, as we know, as we age, things get tougher. And you may be in that phase right now where you've tacked on some unwanted pounds, which is not uncommon after the holidays, and you would love to shed them. Well, they take weight loss management serious. They've got programs and products and people that can get you back on track and headed in the right direction. Your appearance is important, and it gets challenging as we get older because things start happening, right? You know, the bags under the eyes. You know how this works. Well, they can talk to you about PRP, hair removal, Botox, and finally hormone therapy. Maybe you haven't had the same drive lately, haven't had the same energy lately, or you've been experiencing some mood swings. You've just felt off. You haven't felt like yourself. Well, get your levels checked because they tend to dip as we get older, and that may be the reason these things are happening. But their staff could sit down and talk to you about BHRT, testosterone, estrogen. They do it all, and they do it all under one roof there in Cool Springs at 1642 Westgate Circle. If you want to learn everything about them, just go to their website, CoolSpringsMD.com, or you can always pick up the phone and schedule an appointment or a consultation by dialing this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Hey, don't forget to go to the game, Nashville.com/deals, to check out Nashville's best deals. Right now, $100, you'll get an extra $50 to the Woodhouse Spa in Nashville. Also, you can save 75% off Nashville Armory, the Beanbag Coffee and Tea Shop, and Seafood Sensation. Also, get $50 free with a $100 purchase in downtown dollars where we are. Check out all Nashville's best deals right now at thegamenashville.com/deals. Back here on Darren Donning, Chase, and D-Mace. No Chase. He's being a suit today. Mm-hmm. Willie will join us in just a bit. And we're live here at Bridgestone Arena at the Patron Platinum Club. All right, let's flip things over on the Titans side. So we talked about the three receivers, Jamar Chase, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins on the Cincinnati side. Let's start with A.J. Brown. Hasn't exactly been a world beater in the playoffs. He is fantastic in the regular season. When he was upright and available this year, he really was the only chance at times. It was the only chance they had of being able to score points. I mean, he was that 49ers game. If they didn't have A.J. Brown, they were not winning that game. No, not winning that game. No chance. So how much can A.J. Brown counter what Ja'Marr Chase brings to the table? So one versus one.
I mean, it's hard to say because they play in two different types of offenses. But if you're just talking strictly ability out there on the football field, then I think, you know, he's Ja'Marr Chase's equal. I think what he does are some of the things that Ja'Marr Chase does as well. I think Ja'Marr is a better hands catcher than A.J., but I think A.J. is a more explosive runner once he gets the ball in his hand. It's just like tackling a big running back.
Yep.
He's physical when he gets the balls in his ball in his hands. He high points the ball down the field majority of the times. And what A.J.
Tell people what that means.
Well, what it means is he catches the ball at his highest point. He doesn't wait till it gets in his body. Or if he's coming back to a curl route or a comeback route, he reaches out to catch the ball because he has strong hands and he's able to do that. He has a lot of confidence in his hands. So that's what I mean by high pointing the football or not allowing it to get into your body. You know, he's a guy that works well inside, outside, in the backfield if you choose to, you know, do some screens or whatnot. The quick pass is his forte. I think that quick end that the Titans throw after play action, I don't understand why teams don't see it because I'm watching and I'm like, based on where he's lined up, he's running an in route. It's tailor-made for him each and every time. But because of what he has done throughout the season, teams still are not quite sure or still don't want to commit to that in route. Because if you miss him or you miss the ball, he's gone for a touchdown. But he's very good on those slants, on those quick ends, those quick posts that Ryan loves throwing to him, especially when he's condensed or he's like the third receiver to a trip side. He does an excellent job at finding holes in zone defense. And when you play him press man-to-man, majority of the times, he wins. Now, one thing that I have seen from him, when he's gone up against a really good corner, he hasn't played well. For whatever reason, I don't know. But once when he's gone up against good corners, really good ones, he hasn't played well. So that's why I say that Ja'Marr Chase may be just a tad bit better at this point. But, I mean, AJ's no slouch, man. I would take him on my team, you know, every week, you know, every Sunday and on Monday. But his availability is always a question.
Yep.
You know, not just him not playing, but him playing in games and then have to leave because of an injury. Or take him, you know, having to leave for a few plays here and there. But other than that, I mean, they need him full go if they have any opportunity to win this game. More so, and I think, and I'm sure people may say this is like, you know, a cardinal sin, you can never say that, but at this juncture, they need AJ more than they need Derrick Henry. I think they do, because they've proven that they can still run the ball well without Henry and with Foreman in the backfield. People, he's not Derrick Henry. I understand that. Derrick Henry changes defenses. But if AJ's not out there, then teams get to pile in. They get to put that sixth and seventh man in the box. If AJ's out there, they can't do that because they have to guard him. So I think more importantly, he needs to be the guy that's out there. He's the most important piece to this offense, because when he's not in a game, this offense struggles.
He keeps them honest,
and it makes it. And when he's not playing, it makes it harder for Derrick Henry. Yep. So he has to be out there.
He too has responded in big games this year against Kansas City. He had 9 targets, 8 catches, 133 yards, and a touchdown. So it is interesting that both Chase and A.J. Brown both had big games. Ja'Marr Chase and A.J. Brown both had big games against the Chiefs this year. I brought up the San Francisco game. He was targeted 16 times in that game. Mm-hmm. He had 11 catches, 145 yards, and a touchdown. The Rams game, he was targeted 11 times, only 5 catches, 42 yards, no touchdowns. The Indianapolis game, big game, the one in Indy. He was targeted 11 times, 10 catches, 155 yards, and a touchdown. I know the Colts are not in the playoffs, but I was just trying to, I guess, point out his huge game. So, you know, I don't disagree with anything you said. I do think he is vitally important to be out there because he will keep you on. I mean, you have to give him his proper attention. I mean, you cannot ignore A.J. Brown if he's out there.
No, you can. I mean, you would be a fool to you know, single him up on a defensive back. I don't think Cincinnati has a defensive back that could cover him one-on-one. Well, I know they don't. So it would be, you know, advantageous to them if they double him and make it very difficult or try to frustrate him throughout the game. The other guys, Julio Jones, it amazes me. He's only had 48 targets. 48 targets.
Well, he's been barely available.
Well, he played 10 games, but still 48 targets. That to me, because I'm watching the game, I watch the game a lot with AJ, I mean with Julio. And as a receiver, what I hated most, you know what I hated most as a receiver? Not catching the ball. I mean, I did hate not catching the ball. But you know what I hated the most?
When
coming
out
the game.
Getting ignored?
No, yeah, that too. But coming out the game,
yeah,
I hated that. I don't care if I ran a 9, caught it, I'm coming back to the huddle. I'm taking a few deep breaths and I'm coming back to the huddle. It seems like, I don't know, is it because of personnel or what, but he's always just in and out of the game. How can you get in the flow when you're in and out of the game? Are you taking yourself out? Are they taking you out? I don't understand that part.
Well,
and they do it with AJ too, which I don't understand, but they do it with Julio a lot. And I don't get that.
Well, it's probably the same frustration that the head coach has that you have, because all year when asked about Julio Jones, I mean, he doesn't give much.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say much, which probably says something, right?
Yeah.
My guess is he's not his type of guy, right?
Because it does seem that way, doesn't it?
I mean, if you just
watch the game and you watch Julio's demeanor when he's coming out of the game or when he's – it's not the same as A.J.
No.
Or Westbrook Akina. It's just not. And you wonder, is he and Vrabel on the same page? Or he and Downey on the same page? You just wonder that. And you still wonder that. Even though he had a okay game, people are blowing it out of the water, the Houston game, he had it was below okay to his standards compared to what he has done in his career. That was a game.
I know, and people went crazy.
Yeah, they went crazy.
Look, he's back. 5 catches, 56 yards, and a touchdown, and first one of the year, by the way, and everybody went nuts, and it's like, wow, our standards are really low for
this guy. I guess
when
it comes to him, yeah.
My goodness, I thought this guy was everybody's Julio Jones, Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Julio Jones, Hall of Fame. Like, the next word you use is Hall of Fame after Julio Jones, and that's the standard? Like, everybody went nuts? 5 catches, 56 yards, and a touchdown? Oh, okay. Well, I mean, if that excites you, and then you think that's, you know, what he was brought in to do, then okay. So do you think he can help them?
I think he can, but they have to, meaning the offensive coordinator and Julio Jones, they got to figure out a way, and Ryan, they got to figure out a way to get him in the game early. AJ has proven that, okay, if you don't get him in the game, you know, the first couple of series, he's still good. Because, I mean, he was like that in the San Francisco. I believe it was the San Francisco game where you didn't see much of him in the first half. But then in the second half, if I recall, he just went crazy.
Who, AJ?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He just went crazy.
Over the game.
Exactly. So he's not a guy that, okay, you got to get the ball to him. He would love the ball early, but he's not that guy. Hey, you get a ball to me whenever you want to, and I'm going to make a play. Well, it seems like Julio needs to be in the game early. And if they want to have a chance or keep coverage off of AJ, give the ball to Julio early. Give him a couple of slants, a couple of hitches. Get the ball in his hand, see what he can do. And that warms him up, and that keeps him mentally in the game. If you don't target him early, mentally, he's gone. He's checked out. He's already proven it. He's going to keep on coming in and out of the game. And then it's going to be a point where Westbrook and Keen is in more than him, which is from what I've seen, that's not a bad thing. I like Westbrook Akina. I do. He's made some big catches. He's been available. He's been where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there. And Ryan trusts him. He's made some big catches this year, especially down the middle of the field.
I'd like to see him get to the chains a little bit more.
Yeah, that was the one kind of, brain fart he had.
I'd just like to see him get to the sticks.
Yes.
A couple times, but overall, yes.
Yes, overall, he's done a really good job.
So you think he's a good complimentary receiver?
I think he is. Is he your permanent number two? I don't know. But he's a guy that has deserved to play. He's done enough to be in your game plan. He's done enough. You have guys on this team. A.J. Brown, he's at the top of your list as far as game planning. You're trying to find every way. I'm talking about beside Derrick Henry. A.J. Brown is fine. You find every possible way to get the ball to A.J. Brown. Well, next on that list should be Westbrook Akina. It should be because he's proven it. You find a way to get him the football because Ryan trusts him.
Chase has walked in. I don't know if he's here to do a Blue Chew spot or what are we doing? Is he just here to talk?
Or hey, did you get my text?
I would say I need to see the phone. The phone screener doesn't say Blue Chew, but I can't see the phone screener. So, he's here to fix it.
He came here to fix the phone screener.
Awesome. All right, we'll come back.
Chase.
Hour number three of the DDC is next.